Hello and welcome back to another episode of Long Story Short, the podcast about storytelling and connection. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Sophia. Through this platform, we highlight the unique stories of people making a difference as marketers, entrepreneurs, and social impact advocates, or people who are all of the above. On this week's show, we delve into the concept of kindness and what that means for both individuals and your business. At 4:29 a.m., I know I am most definitely asleep. But this is when our guest, Jake Dreyfuss, wakes up to begin his day of thinking, dreaming, and running his company, Bright Pink Sox Strategy Partners.
We had a great conversation with Jake. His entrepreneurial drive and passion are contagious, and I love his strategy for building accountability groups. In terms of his background, Jake has overseen over $1 billion in real estate transactions since 2003 in Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and Pennsylvania, where he was most recently the CEO of the Philly Living team at Keller Williams. In the past 5 years alone, Jake scaled the Philly Living business from $75 million to almost $300 million annually. In reflecting upon the growth, Jake realized the success was directly related to the ability of the leadership team to take strategic risks in order to be able to position the business in a category of its own. This sent Jake on a mission to become an expert strategist in order to help other businesses grow and thrive. So without further ado, please enjoy our conversation with Jake Dreyfuss.
Jake, thank you so much for being on this week's episode of Long Story Short.
So glad to be here. Thanks, guys.
So we want to start by actually complimenting you. So one of the many things I appreciate about you is the interconnectedness that you keep between your personal self and the initiatives that you have taken on in your professional journey. So I want to begin by discussing your world today and the various pathways that maybe merged or have influenced what you do now.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for the compliment. I appreciate that. I'll always take those. I'm fascinated by pretty much everything I come in contact with in life. Recently, you know, I was like, I don't really know how to bake. And I live in Denver, which can create some challenges. I'm like, let me just try. I create a schedule with my kids where we bake every weekend now. So that's kind of like a pattern, as you pointed out, Sophia, in my life. So I'm fascinated with baking, with biking. So we'll start on the personal side, with biking, with just having family time, so breakfast with the kids. On the professional side, I became introduced to the concept of having a kind of a professional coach or a guide. So not only do I have one for myself, but I started a business doing that myself as well, because I found that was one of the best ways to not live a hypocritical lifestyle, was to spend my time trying to pour into others. And I find that I probably benefit more from those relationships often than the clients do, because I get to learn a lot through others. I also became fascinated with the concept of creating wealth. And, you know, I hate to use the term passive income, because I've never really found a true way to create. But to me, passive means like I have no responsibility whatsoever, and unless I'm doing like a debt investment. But even then, I'm still checking in. Like, there's no such thing as me sitting back on the beach drinking a drink and just collecting money. I like to be actively involved. Maybe that's just psychological. So actually, even this is very exciting. This is the first people in the world to know this, I think. On 2 days from now, after recording this, I'm closing on my first car wash. So buying the land and the car wash business. So there you go, trying to create more income there. Again, I'm not calling it passive, because I'm gonna be learning more about soaps and different machinery than I've ever learned before. But you know, and those that know me will probably laugh, because I'm not a very mechanically inclined person, but I'm doing it anyway. So yeah. But in terms of career, you know, actual true kind of quote unquote career on a resume. I guess you could say that the thing that's lasted the longest in my life is real estate. After graduating from Penn State, I went directly into the real estate professional on the residential side, because I was fascinated with consumer psychology and decision making, and wanted to see up close and personal how a business decision and an emotional decision can be merged into one. And to me, that's what residential real estate represents. So that's been the thing that's stayed with me the longest. Other than, as Cirque may know this, started DJing when I was 13. So I still love music, although I don't get paid at the DJ parties anymore. I still love taking control of Spotify when there's one family's over. So to your point, Sophia, there's a lot to unpack with me. But those are different things I'm fascinated with and have used to actually create wealth and income for my family.
That's great. And I'm laughing, Jake, because, you know, I do know you. But frankly, the thing that I would say about that is running the car wash. And frankly, even as you're talking about the passive income, and that's the part where I'm laughing, because like, I know you well enough that there wouldn't be a thing anyway. That's just an impossibility.
Yeah.
But so can you tell you, I mean, now here you are with Bright Pink Sox. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what you do and how you process this and how you work with your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. This business started, Bright Pink Sox started as a kind of a passion project. So like I said, I'm a real estate agent. And to me, that just gets me lumped into a category with 8 million other humans in this country who have paid a couple hundred bucks and have taken a test. And I really don't like that feeling. It's a pretty low barrier to entry. And so I look back at my career, I was like, well, what helped me stand out? Because I've had some awesome successes and a lot of support from my community in that business. And I found that, you know, to me, it was never the amount of outbound phone calls I was making. It was really about the personal connections I was able to maintain. And I found that the reason why we maintain connections, or at least this is my hypothesis, the reason we maintain personal connections is because we have a connection to each other's story. So I crossed paths with a gentleman, his name is Ben Zolden, who wrote a book called What Great Salespeople Do. At the time, I was working for a company called Salesforce.com, and he came in to run a pilot program with the salespeople that worked there. And so the hypothesis was they put basically 20 of us through this program where we worked directly with Ben to work on storytelling. A skill that really were, you know, at least I was never taught growing up. And so they followed our successes versus success of people who are just kind of doing a different sales kind of methodology, a little more direct. And so I got to go through this program with, like I said, 20 other people. We spent a whole week with him and then had ongoing conversations. And I found that my success was in direct proportion to my ability to not only share my story, but then how effectively I could have someone share theirs back with me after they heard mine. So in other words, how quickly could we create that personal connection? So you know, fast forward the clock back in the real estate business, and I was running a larger team, and I was faced with the same predicament. Okay, well, we have more people on our team, but that doesn't make us different. We may have more money in the bank because we've sold more homes, but that doesn't make us different. We may be able to spend a little bit more on our logo, but that again doesn't make us different. What does? And so again, put our team through this conversation of let's look at an actual story arc. Let's, you know, maybe people have never even seen it. Like, you know, Google story arc for those listening right now. And just look at one and then start thinking about your life in terms of a story arc, or start thinking about the small things in your life that you may be most proud of, and unpack and just practice telling that story. So after our team had some success, where agents were starting to increase their confidence level because they were more confident sharing their story of why they were an agent or maybe why they should be hired, because it had nothing to do with maybe the shininess of your folder or the price that you're going to sell their home for. It was you. So I became fascinated with that. As you know, that's the word I use a lot that Sophia pointed out. And I said, well, if it's working for us, it could help other people. And then when it was time for my family to relocate to another part of the country for my wife's work, because my wife had been so loving and following me literally across the country and back for my professional aspirations, it was like, when it was time to support her and move to Denver, I said, well, what can I do and how can I still work in the industry I love? And so I started Brightpink Stocks as initially just servicing real estate agents who wanted to stand out from the crowd. And of course, we went right back to the storytelling angle. Now that's a practice that's grown a little outside of the industry to basically any industry. We do a lot of work in private aviation now, coincidentally. And so we start by helping businesses unpack really who they are at the core, help make sure that those stories are shared with the world so they can not only help retain the talent they have, help grow their internal talent, but also help grow their client list. So it's a bit of a passion project, but it's basically a strategy consultancy that helps people build their businesses through the use of storytelling.
That's awesome. And I just want to, storytelling. So I grew up professionally as an analyst. I was a data guy. And for me, I was so logically driven all the time. And I remember I'd walk into presentations and think to myself, okay, I got this nailed because I can prove these, you know, six bullet points. I would sort of walk up there. I'd, you know, go through the bullet points. To me, it's kind of like airtight, mic drop, conversation over, and then people still not convinced. And so I remember having that same epiphany, you know, probably 10, 15 years ago and saying, well, wait a second. Like for me, for some reason, like this pure logic is not working. I have all the data to prove all the points they need. And yet they still don't want to invest in, you know, whatever this decision I'm trying to pitch them on or, you know, whatever the case may be. And so I'm with you too, that it wasn't until finding and recognizing the importance that emotional impact that stories can have. And, you know, there's all sorts of brain chemistry that actually happens where the storyteller and the person listening to the story, their brains actually sync up. Like there's so much amazing stuff to it. And frankly, I would credit Sophia with bringing a lot of the sort of the psychology approach to what we do as well. But to me, I think, you know, similarly, we found that to be really the most incredible sort of unlock for a lot of good things in business.
Yes, sir.
So one thing I enjoy about your approach and something about your background as well is specifically around the level of awareness, self-awareness, is as it relates to accountability. And so can you talk about the intentionality you've had behind creating accountability communities, whether it's, you know, waking up early to work out, building more effective relationships or building businesses, right? But the intentionality around the accountability communities.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. So the drive to want to build communities comes from kind of my biggest fear, I guess is probably the most direct and simple way to put it. What gets me out of bed, what keeps me moving, is a fear of not getting to experience all that life has to offer. I'm not a psychologist, Sophia. You could probably unpack this more than I could. Part of it at least comes from losing my father when I was younger and seeing some of the struggles he had. So not only did he have MS, but unfortunately he died in a car accident when I was 13. And so, you know, that taught me a lot of lessons, I think, as I would reflect on that later in life, that, wow, he never got to experience this. He never got to experience that. And so let me, if not for me, I owe it to him to do that. Right. So, I don't know if you know this, but I had a fascination with flying when I was younger. And in college, I had the opportunity to learn how to become a pilot. I got my pilot's license in college. And that was one of those things where I specifically remember reaching out to my mom, and I was like, Mom, I'm going to get my pilot's license, you know, cause I just done like a discovery flight. And I'm like, this is awesome. And she's like, well, I am really scared about that, but I'm not going to hold you back because I know it's in your passion. And, you know, and again, this one of those moments where I was like, oh, what would Dad say? Like, I kind of used it as my excuse to say yes to things that's scary. So I started doing that. But to your question, so that's, I wanted the audience to see, like, that's a little bit of the background of like why I think my brain wants to experience so many things because it's a fear of loss. So I recognize that I am just my personality profile. I'm a lot more likely to do things when other people are depending on me than to do it just for myself to feel good or to reward myself. So, you know, there's a time in my life where, and maybe some people listening can relate. I had a young child. She was 6 months old and we were already expecting another one. And I was like, it didn't seem like there was a lot of time in the day for me. So I wanted to make more time. So I decided I wanted to wake up earlier. And so I found a friend at work who was going through a different but similar personal struggle and said, you know, I need to keep some time for myself as well. Let's do this together. So every morning, just he and I would wake up and we text each other a picture of our watch from when we woke up. And that's how it started. Fast forward the clock, 16 months later, there was almost 900 people around the country in our private group. We were waking up on Zoom. We were like, we were using Zoom before Zoom was cool. This is like 5 years ago, you know? And so Tuesdays and Thursdays, we'd be on Zoom it was literally 5 a.m. for 45 minutes. And we read a book together each month. Everyone would set a goal for the month. It was this cool organic thing. And, but to your question, I recognize that again, I was the pattern with Sky, the gentleman I started with, most likely would have ended had we not brought on other people around us to support us. And that for me was kind of an aha. I was like, because, you know, there's the mornings I didn't want to get up, but I had 300 people waiting for me on the 5 a.m. Zoom call on the East Coast. And then an hour later, I'd do the Central and, you know, the whole Pacific. It was crazy. But that aha led me to start realizing, okay, this is how I get myself in motion. Because otherwise, ideas just swim around in my head. And a lot of times, I'm afraid to talk about them or to take action. My wife made a comment to me about a year later that she's like, you know, yeah, you work really hard, but you're becoming kind of not antisocial, but kind of you're not making the effort to go see people and meet new people. She said it in a very loving way, but that was how I heard it. I'm like, you know what, you're right. But the reality was my priorities were my family and my business and my personal health, and lower on the list was actually networking, because frankly things were going pretty well. I didn't actually feel the need, but I did recognize that the more I met new people, the better I felt. But I wasn't naturally inclined to do it, so I was like, well, if I'm going to spend time away from my family, then I'm going to at least mix in two things together at the same time that are important. So if I'm going to spend time away, at least there'll be, you know, overarching benefit. So I formed the active networking group. It's like, screw it. If I'm going to go network, we're going to go do something active. I'm going to get my workout in. So put it out there. It's like, you know, hey guys, here's what I'm thinking about doing. Hey, you know, hey, Facebook world or we're supposed to, who'd be interested in this? And turns out I had great feedback. So we would go to at the time I was living in Philadelphia, the Steps of the Art Museum, and we'd run the steps for a half hour. We'd split up into groups and we'd talk, you know, as we were running the steps, or we'd go for a 5 mile run and we'd network and everyone would come back and report on what they learned from their partner. And, you know, again, I didn't want to go to a bar after work and, you know, and stand there and drink. I did want to meet people. So let's go and do this. So to your point, Jeff, that's kind of the pattern I would form. Is like, all right, this is good for me. How can I form a group that actually, kind of enforces and confirms it's going to happen on a regular basis? That's what's happened in my life.
Something I like is that I know you said you're very externally motivated of, you know, there's this reward of human connection or partnering in community. But I do appreciate that realistically, if you were completely externally motivated, you would just go to a bar and do the conventional ways. But I think the internal motivation comes from, okay, I know I need to do this thing, but I want to do it in a different way. And so I'm going to do that in a different way and then get other people to come in and join me. And so I really appreciate that approach to it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's like, it's a lot of, I have a lot of, like, as I'm sure a lot of our listeners do too, like a lot of this weird self-talk, like, oh, Jake, you'd much prefer just to be home and your flip-flops, you know, cooking for the family. But same, I'm like, man, I really do enjoy meeting awesome people. Like, it's like this battle. Like, so I have to break the pattern. And that, to your point of view, that's how I break the pattern of like that conversation in my head of like, oh, it's so comfortable just to be home at the end of the day versus like, ah, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to do this. Like, and I even hired a film crew. I have a video I'll send you guys that we can post in the show notes of like the first event. And it was awesome. It was awesome. So it's something I think, by the way, and maybe there's a listener out there that's like, hey, Jake, I want to help you grow that. Reach out, because of all the things on my list, like that hasn't become, it still exists to a small degree, but I feel like there's a big opportunity with that. So maybe someone wants to help me build that. So reach out.
Yeah. And the thing, I mean, again, I just want to say, I mean, it really is, you know, brave. You might not say this about yourself, but the idea that you're able to identify that the end goal, right? Like what ultimately are you trying to achieve out of that? And then knowing that that's going to mean you're going to have to get over some anxiety, some discomfort in that process to get there, but that the end goal will be worth it. And so then therefore, when you put, you know, once you add the layers of you have a community that's counting on you, now you don't really have a choice but to go through it. And that's, you know, again, why from a psychology perspective, that accountability is so important, because it's so much easier if you say, I'm going to get up at 5 a.m. every day and work out, and you're just going to go in by yourself to the gym. And then, you know, by Wednesday of the first week, you're like, yeah, I don't feel like it. And then it's just easy to let yourself off the hook. But it's different when you say, nope, they're waiting for me, right? Like, and not just one person, you know, you have 900 of your best friends waiting for you there, and you don't want to let them down.
Yeah. And so often in our brains, we make things so complicated. Well, if I start the group, then I have to run it forever. Well, guess what? Yep. I don't run it anymore. Right. There's other people doing it. Now there's actually a 6 a.m.ers, you know, that guy runs. He starts, but yeah, and yet I still have the habit created. I wake up mm-hmm. without the alarm clock. I'm good to go. So I still got the benefit. But it's like, you know, we make things so overcomplicated in our brains. Like, well, if I start this today, what does that mean about next month? It means nothing. We even have this conversation about podcasts. Like, well, I was kind of scared to start mine too. It's like, well, even if it's only 5 episodes, but I really poured my heart into it and I experienced it, like that was worth it. It doesn't have to be something I do for the next 20 years of my life. Like, why do our brains go there? Anyway,
yeah.
Another question for another day.
I think it's also, you can connect that back to storytelling too, right? Where people have this idea maybe in their heads of what their story is or their company story is, but then, by saying it, that makes it really our story. And then we have to commit to it and it can never change. And this is what it is because I've put that out into the world. And I think that's one of the biggest barriers to sharing your story, but your story is only as good as whoever knows about it, right? Otherwise it just stays and lives in your head. So
that's right. Yeah. And the last chapter's not written yet.
No.
We can keep writing, right? It's like, anyway. So, yeah, well, I'm with you.
And to me, I mean, I'm so fascinated by the idea of identity and the fact that, again, it's the stories we tell ourselves. And so, you know, in Atomic Habits, it was a really powerful beginning of the book where they talk about sort of recognize all of the identities you've created for yourself and the stories, again, that you keep telling yourself, right? Like, I've told myself for years that I'm a night owl, you know, that I'm up really late. And again, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because the last thing we want to do is go counter to the identities that we feel for ourselves. We don't want to go against our own narratives that we've created. But I think so much of that is that's the thing, right? Like, but we, for whatever reason, you know, it's like, okay, am I ready to create this identity as a podcaster, right? Because, and you tell yourself the story that, well, now I have to do it forever, because what if I stop doing it? Then people are going to, you know, it's like, I mean, chances are no one's going to know aside from you, but just again, it's getting over that thing and recognizing that your identities can change and they should. And that's mm-hmm. okay, right? To be comfortable with that.
Absolutely. You just jogged my memory that I went to, there's the book, The One Thing, written by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. And a friend of mine, Jeff Woods, who actually lives down the street, runs that company and goes out speaking for the brand. He does an annual goal setting retreat where you can either go solo or you can bring your spouse. And one of the exercises he puts you through is exactly that, Jeff. You spend about 5 minutes in silence just writing in all the different roles or identities you have or play in your life. And what hit me like a ton of bricks was, well, first of all, how many roles or identities we all have or think we play. But then when we started standing up and sharing them, how much I recognized, oh my, I forgot to put some on there. Like there was a very important familiar relationship I had that I didn't put on there. I was like, wow. Like, these are the things I'm focused on. Like, what about this? And so just to your point, like, I think it's a great, you know, maybe the listeners can do this too, but like, take some time and write down all of your identities and like circle the ones that are the most important and look for evidence that you're actually fulfilling those or following those, that passion in your life. But that was some, there's some big ahas for me there. Like, wow, I portray myself to be this, but it didn't even show up on my list, you know, the supporting characteristics. So, it's, you know, insert events like that into your life where you can, you know, force to turn the mirror on yourself for a little bit.
I think in addition to that, though, doing that and then reassessing, okay, was this 3 years ago, was this how I still would have defined myself? And that sort of shows you the benefit of changing your identity as opposed to viewing it as a negative or potentially scary thing.
Sure.
So I want to shift to Jake, to an identity that I know is near and dear to you, for better and for worse, that, you know, let's go back a little bit to high school and, you know, senior class 1999 voted nicest. And congratulations, by the way, if I never told
you
that.
Still very proud.
but I'm curious specifically, you know, now that you've had some time intentionally to reflect on it, I'm curious from your perspective, what impact did that have on shaping your identity, and what are some of the things that came along with that?
Yeah, well, I think the lesson learned was, to make a long story short, was to be careful when people bestow upon you an identity, right? And to unpack what I mean by that, I don't think it's one of those moments where, like, I necessarily, you know, when I opened the yearbook and saw it, it was like, all right, well, now I'm nice. It was something like people have mentioned to me all along and growing up, oh, you're so nice. And I think my brain made the connection with, well, that's how you have to be, because you've been hearing it for so long. And it's almost like, well, you've been doing it this long, you got to keep going. But I never took a moment to define, like, well, what does being nice mean to me? What's my definition of that? Or what kindness, you know? Because to me, the word nice is pretty airy-fairy. So the older I got, the more I recognized, I'm like, man, like, some of my personal relationships are not really working out the way I want. My professional relationships are, like, ending in funky ways. And I was like, this doesn't feel like me. And I would lose sleep over it. Like, there was times in, I can think back to high school or college, like, if I knew I upset someone, I wouldn't be able to sleep. You know, I had to have, like, closure. It was an obsession. But to that point, a lot of times I would just let it kind of, I wouldn't actually approach to get the closure. Like, if they never approached me, it would never happen. I would just let it slowly fade into the background. Eventually, I would be okay with it. Or I would tell myself I was okay with it. But I really wasn't, if I'm being honest. So, I don't know. I was turning 40 this past year. And I think, I don't know, for whatever reasons, I became more introspective as that birthday approached. I'm like, well, what is my life? What have I done so far or accomplished in life? What has my life meant to me? What do I want? You know, the word legacy starts to creep in more and more, I think, the older you get to, right? So I started to think about that and actually put pen to paper on defining it. And I decided that, to me, the actual more appropriate word should be kindness. And the way I defined it was, a kind person, this is kind of an aspirational thought for me, a kind person would be direct, would say what they're thinking, would leave very little, if any, gray area in relationships, and would say the things that need to be said so that the business could do what it needs to do or the relationship could do what it needs to do, whether continue on or end. And that's okay. And that was different from how I lived, clearly, as I was illustrating earlier. So to me, the way my brain works is just creating the awareness around that does a lot of, like, the heavy lifting for me. Just having the light bulb go off, I was like, oh. So that's ironically when my businesses started to actually grow to the extent I wanted them to, was when I recognized I could just be direct. And that was my definition of being kind. That's a kind partner. That's a kind, you know, consultant, a client, whatever. So when I look back and there, you know, it took 40 years to recognize that, to unpack that. So that yearbook to me was just kind of like something I could physically look at and touch and say, all right, this wasn't just in my brain. This actually, like, people really viewed me this way, and I took it to a level that wasn't healthy. So I'm very grateful that there was that yearbook floating out there, which I could find a picture of. Maybe I'll send it to you for the show notes. But
love to,
you know. But that, you know, I'm very grateful. Like I said, I'm very grateful for that. And so there was a point I could look back to and say, I want to change. And you know, also a great reminder for me, it's never too late to change. Never too late to work on yourself. And I'm not punishing myself for it. I create the awareness, like, I choose to live differently now, you know, and everything worked out for a reason. Like, it took all those failed relationships, those failed partnerships, to get to where I'm feeling a sense of peace today.
And I think that's part of building your story, right? Is, okay, this might be externally this word nice or whatever word gets used and as you said, imposed upon you, but how can we then take our own perception of it and actually define those words and what they mean to us?
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I really appreciate is not only did you take this word and define it for you, you created a whole podcast around kindness. And so I would love to hear a little bit about, I know we've talked about stories, but one thing that really interests me is where and how people choose to share those stories. And there are so many different ways now to communicate. And so I think it's really interesting that you could have taken this idea of kindness and done a bunch of different things with it, right? But you chose to create a podcast around it. And so I would love to hear a little bit about why that was the platform you chose and how you created this podcast.
Absolutely. So the podcast is called Sell Them with Kindness. And of course, you can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts and would love your feedback on it. It's, again, the 40th birthday, I think, created an artificial point where I was like, I should start sharing myself and put myself out there. And I've always been thinking about this, but I really, in business as an entrepreneur, I feel like I was faking it a lot. Literally faking it. So I started my career in real estate, like I said, in 2003. Well, I switched brokerages at one point and went to this boot camp where for a week, your first week there, you were just calling a bunch of strangers. I was literally faking it. I was calling people I knew and lying about the results. And I think when it hit me was when I was watching the Wolf of Wall Street movie. And I was like, well, because obviously Glenn Gallagher and Ross is from another era, but the Wolf of Wall Street for us was kind of the first time our generation who had never seen that with Glenn Ross were seeing this is Hollywood's portrayal of how to truly hustle, how to build a business. And obviously it's there's hyperbole in that story, but it's real. And there's this whole culture nowadays of this whole hustle culture. I'm like, I just don't relate to it. I want my business to come to me really easily. Why do I want to hustle? I don't know. I could never relate to it. And so I feel like I was kind of a fraud because I'm in a business where in real estate where it's like you should be making a lot of calls. And yet my business was fine and healthy and frankly fun. So I thought it was interesting that, growing up, I mean, Cirque, maybe you've heard this growing up too, because you happen to be a very kind person. Nice guys finish last.
Mm-hmm.
Whether if we're talking about dating or business or whatever, or just life. And I was like, well, I just want to seek evidence that that's not true. So the podcast for me is a way to interview people to continue to prove to myself that and justify the way I want to build my business is true and correct. So it's, again, just the pattern I follow of I want to build my business this way and I want to make sure that each week I'm meeting people that confirm the way I'm doing it's correct. So I don't have that long of time for my brain to wander off and build doubt. So we feature stories of kind business leaders and entrepreneurs, male and female, who are proving that kindness can be part of a business plan that's also profitable. So, a business just doesn't have to be, some people think, oh, it's just a nonprofit. Well, no. A for-profit business can be kind and profitable. Typically, the sentence ends after kind, but we want to prove that it's an and. I can be kind and direct. I can be kind and aggressive. I can be kind and extremely profitable and extremely, philanthropic. So we're just continuing the sentence with the podcast and just looking for more and more evidence that kindness can be part and should be part of a strong business plan.
That's great. There was an Adam Grant book called Give and Take that I read. It's an older book. It's about 7 or 8 years old, but I read it probably about a year ago. And I remember reading. And so it's like, okay, so there's givers, who are generally what you'd think of as the nice people, right? The people that want to go out of their way for others in business. There's the takers that are all about what's in it for them. And then there's matchers, people that are kind of let's keep it even. And so, the book sort of begins, and hopefully I'm not giving too much away, but the idea is who performs worse on that scale? And it's givers, right? So of course it's the nice guys finish last, nice guys and gals finish last.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then the cool part. And I remember reading that and saying, you know what? It doesn't matter. To me, it's still more important to do the right things, right? To tell people what they need to hear, to be kind to your point, Jake, not nice. Then there's the big reveal, and it turns out that the people who finish first are also givers, and that there's a way of doing it without being a doormat. So yes, when you make yourself completely subservient to other people's whims and you have nothing in it for yourself, you're going to end up putting yourself in a situation that you're helping a lot of others, not helping yourself. But there's actually the most powerful and effective way in business is to find that synergy. And Jake, to your point, I mean, I think I've been, trying to find the same thing my entire professional career is how can you do both? And so personally, I'm so glad, and I've told you this, but I'm so glad that you created that podcast. I think it's such an important message that people need to hear, that it isn't just this, always be closing, you know, kind of that, no, the only way to cut a deal or to get new clients is to force them into it, or, you know, that's not the way sales should work, right? Like, there are other ways to do it. And I think that we need more examples in society of that.
Yeah. And like, look, I'm not an expert historian by any means, but I think when you look at like the generational impact of everything this country's been through, you know, between the Great Depression, Holocaust survivors, you know, different atrocities that people have been through, like, it would make sense that certain generations feel like they have to fight harder to build a business than as compared to like a mindset of abundance, which, you know, is something that probably doesn't come naturally to most Americans. So I am fascinated by that because I too grew up in a household where, you know, to kind of illustrate the extent of the pain that was felt in like a couple generations above me, Herman Dreyfus, who's my grandfather, you know, had left Europe during the Holocaust because his whole family has been taken away. He came to the country not speaking English. He told us that he was from Austria. After he passed away, we found his birth certificate. He was actually from Germany. He just never wanted to admit it. So just I use that to illustrate the point of like how scarce the mindset was in our household growing up. Because of course my parents being backed by that, and of course it trickles down to me. You know, to lie about where you're from, you know, just speaks to all the how else does that affect your brain if that's what you're willing to do. So I think there's just a lot in our, you know, maybe our generation moving forward will rewire how people in this country approach business. Who knows? That's yet to be seen. I guess you'll tell me with statistics later on.
Yeah, we will. And so one thing we want to do is that, you know, thankfully we didn't have to ask, but you already asked or answered your definition of kindness. But because you like to ask on your podcast, we thought it would be, we wanted to ask you, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs?
Well, there's right brain advice and there's left brain advice. I always like to kind of frame it that way, right? So on the left side of our brain, on the logical side, like learn really quickly how to read a financial statement. Generally speaking, like which sounds kind of crazy to say, but it's generally one of those topics in business school. It's like if you're even in business school, that gets kind of glossed over. Just understand how dollars flow in a business if you want to run a business. Start with that. So that's the left brain, kind of the okay, Jake, whatever. Like no, do that. On the right side though is I follow the Steve Blank advice. Like have your idea, be committed to your idea before you start working on an idea. Get out of your building. Go, in other words, go talk to customers. Go, because the customers will help you co-create the product or the service that you're about to build. They'll be excited to. There's a very big difference when you're making a sales call versus a call to ask for feedback. And I feel like it's the greatest advantage an entrepreneur has is kind of the newbie factor. Like call and ask for feedback. Who's going to say no to that? If you ask them they want to buy something right too early, then maybe they'll say no. So just when in doubt, just ask for feedback. And it's a great way to get through the door. So know how to, you know where your dollars are and know your customers.
That was really great advice. And I love that that's a question you always ask everyone else. And I'm happy that we got the opportunity to send it back to you. And the question we always ask on our show now is, how do you define success? And that can be, again, to the point of different words have different definitions for your personal journey. I think this word is fascinating because everyone has their own definition professionally, personally, for you, maybe mixed together. But I would love to hear what your take is on that.
I had a client once that said something to me. It's the one I can't remember his name, but I can remember his face and exactly what he said. And I'll repeat it now. He said, Jake, days of the week and times of day are of no interest to me. That to me was fascinating because it was the first, I was like, wow. Well, that's interesting. There's no constraints. You've achieved whatever you've done or wherever you've got. And it's not to say he had $50 million in the bank or five. It was a mindset that I am where I am. I am where my feet are. And I'm going to choose what I'm going to do next. And I was like, well, gosh, you know, that stopped me in my tracks. I'd never heard anyone say that before. And so to me, that's the definition of wealth is like complete freedom of choice. And what I've realized in my now old age is that, for me, there is no magical number that unlocks that mindset. It's a choice for me to unlock it right now and have things on my schedule that ensure that I'm not hallucinating that I have that actual success, right? So having a personal balance sheet, having a personal financial statement, that you know, making sure that I earn the right to have that mindset, I check in on it. But that to me is the definition is how that gentleman described that day, you know, where days of the week and times of day are of no interest because I am where I am and I'm doing what I want to do.
And also, and the other thing I want to add to that is that it's your definition, right? That you're not letting society define it for you. And I think, you know, as a broader society, that certainly is a trap that we've all seen that we fall into, right? It's not until I get this, till I achieve that. And, you know, the truth is it's hoping that that thing will change your mindset when you have the power to do that yourself today, right now. So that's really powerful.
Yeah, I feel like when I was focused on like, I literally took down like vision boards. So like, I'm just focusing on the gap. I'm not focusing on this. So I was like, I'm going to change that.
That's awesome. And what resources, books, blogs, podcasts, you know, and again, we'll link to all of your stuff, but what resources would you want to share with our audience?
Well, I mean, you can head to brightpinksocks.com. There's a free resource page with all kinds of stuff that I'm fascinated with. It's on there. So you can see how my mind works. It also links right to the podcast there. So it's really kind of that's the place. If you want to learn more about me and connect, you can start there for sure. It's probably the easiest place.
Awesome. And then where can people find you on social media?
I am on Facebook and Instagram. Jacob.Dreyfus, I believe is my name. Or Jake.Dreyfus. Yeah, we'll link to it in the show notes, but I'm on there. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Jake, thank you so much for coming on. And most importantly, thanks for sharing your story with us.
I really appreciate you having me. Thanks, Sophia. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jake.
We had a great conversation with Jake. I love highlighting that you can be kind and successful in business at the same time. If you want to reach out to us directly about this story or inquire about sharing your own story, you can reach us at lsspodcast@circanresearch.com.
We want to make our podcast an engaging story for you. This means that we want your feedback. Click the link in our show notes to answer some questions about your listening experience.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us for a new story next week on Long Story Short.